Welcome to System Mastery, old bean. The most British show in the Enchanted Isles, don't you know? My mate John and I ascribe to that most noble of goals, to record for posterity our notions and thoughts most numerous regarding your rolling play games, or as we call them in Crumpets Upon the Wither, Pidpoddlies. This fortnight, we shall endeavor to discuss Vanishing Point, a dashing tale of hidden worlds and evil gentlemen. Tally-ha! Welcome back. Hello, John. How are you?
Oh, so good. Oh. I am Eric the Red So Fine this evening.
Is that your catchphrase now?
Yeah.
You're feeling Eric the Red So Fine?
It's happened. It's finally happened.
Of violence.
All right. That's right. We've gone full recursion. The podcast has gone up its own ass.
There you go. We are here to discuss Vanishing Point.
Yeah.
A role-playing game of unknown provenance. We found it in a store.
It certainly did. It cost me all of one American dollar.
Which is pretty good. I think we spent $10 on Star Trek, or the actual Starfleet battles or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it was one-tenth the cost of Starfleet battles.
At 10 times the value of not hating everything.
Wasn't that bad, was it?
No, this is a surprising gem among a bunch of dollar bin books.
Yep. So, Vanishing Point is the story of a hidden asteroid a billion miles from here. That's a kind of a planet that's shaped like a brain that's occupied by doofy British stereotypes that insane people have ways to get to.
Yeah.
And then electricity doesn't work there because steampunk is a thing.
Yeah, it is steampunk dream planet where all of your various and sundry neuroses have been given life as an actual thing.
So let's try and discuss the way that the classes in this game work, because they're actually kind of neat. You know how in White Wolf you have all these, like, exalted races and so on that are like, oh, I'm the virtue of secrets, so I'm the chosen of secrets, and that's my power set. This is like, I'm the chosen of being depressed.
Yeah. There are a bunch of races in this game, and instead of a real class, you get skill packages, but your race is sort of the main determining factor of how you're going to play, and each race is its own psychological disorder, unless you are just a random human who happened to fall into this dimension.
Which is what they recommend you play. The book says basically for new beginners, you should always try to play as these, the Lost, as they are known. These are just humans that got here on accident. And, since you don't have to spend a bunch of time learning about crazy powers and so on, you can just kind of be goggle-eyed in amazement at the weirdness of it all.
Yeah, well, at that point, if you're just getting into the game and your DM comes up to you and he's like, look, I've got this book, and it's from the Twisted Imaginings of Ashok Desai, and I want you to play in the world of Vanishing Point.
Okay, fair enough. Let's back up just a second and talk about the cover of this book, because it is a Marilyn Manson album that has pages.
Yep, it is great, and it is role-playing in the Twisted Imaginings of Ashok Desai.
Now, at first I hated Ashok Desai, because he's writing in that kind of tiddlywinks Britishism stuff, you know.
Well, also, at first, he described his book as Twisted Imagining, so I just sort of hated him immediately.
From his own head. But then I learned that he is actually British, and not just fake Brit, not like your classic Doctor Who fan.
Yeah, it's not just, I'm obsessed with steampunk, and so I'm trying to be as British as possible.
Yeah.
He is as British as is possible, because he is British.
Yeah. He is as British as Dr. McWhirter's very original brown sauce.
Indeed.
Yeah. Way more British than me. We're not going to do any accents tonight, because I can't. Maybe John can.
Nope.
Okay, great. There, it's sold.
Ha-ha!
So, the back of the book is just as flavorful and interesting. Lose yourself in a world of insanity, wonder, and intrigue. So many people disappear without trace that it is tempting to attribute their loss to the results of crime, murder, and accidental death. This supposition is wrong. It's also a supposition. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
that's great.
Yeah, it's interesting. So basically, the concept of this book is that every one of the races you can play as is personified insanity. So let's run through them real quick, as best I can remember, because they are actually, there's quite a few of them.
Oh yeah, there's like 12 different things you can be. So you've got your Lost, which are just basic humans.
You've got Phantasts, which are humans that are dreaming they are there, because that's a thing that works.
Yep.
People who are a particular type of crazy can dream their way onto the world.
And the world of Vanishing Point used to be covered in Liquid Dream, and Liquid Dream was just... You can make whatever you want out of it.
My problem with Liquid Dream... Okay, so Liquid Dream is basically... it's ectoplasm. It's mind stuff that can be reshaped however a dreamer wishes into whatever they want.
Yeah.
And then it falls apart when they're done with it. And so my problem with it is that it's called Liquid Dream. And they've even capitalized the D,
yep.
Which doesn't seem like it was named by ancient Atlanteans. It sounds like it was named by a corporation, doesn't it? You know, like...
Oh, yeah. Well, it's... The Liquid Dream has supposed to... have been there since the ancient Atlanteans first found Vanishing Point, and I mean, I have to assume that probably...
Were they calling it, like, Aether stuff? Or come on, give me something. Give me a regular fantasy. Liquid Dream with a capital D?
The other weird thing is, so Liquid Dream, being that you can just sort of imagine whatever you want and turn it into that, is a ridiculously hot commodity in the Vanishing Point, because you can do whatever the fuck you want with it.
Mm-hmm.
And these Phantasts are made out of Liquid Dream, and I can't imagine that any time one dreams that he's in the Vanishing Point, someone doesn't just immediately kill that guy and harvest his Liquid Dream.
Where is he coming from? Does he generate it?
Or yeah, he's supposed to come from essentially where old Atlantis got sucked into the Vanishing Point.
Mm-hmm.
That's where most of the remaining Liquid Dream is.
Okay.
And they fashion a body out of Liquid Dream and then walk around in it. So they are basically just a walking pile of cash that people leave alone for some reason.
That's going to come up again, because there's another race in this game that's literally made out of weapons.
Yeah.
So, okay, so let's you've get got, them real quick. They got the Bladekin.
Yeah, the Bladekin, who represent homicidal mania.
Yep, and they are basically just knife golems.
And it's interesting because there are a couple different pictures in here, and one of them is real bad. The one for Bladekin just sort of looks like a dude with a sword coming out of his arm.
Yeah.
But the description and a few of the other ones, they're actually literally made out of blades, like... the whole thing.
And I gotta be honest, it's not enough blades. Like, I was expecting it to be basically humans fashioned out of a bunch of blades that are so close to each other that you know, they kind of look like sinuous, like skin or something. But no, it's like, oh, you have one knife that is your upper arm, two knives that are your lower arm, and they connect to three knives that are your hand.
Well, the way they're described is, you know, each one is put together differently, and yeah. Some actually form, like, the outline of muscle, sinew, and stuff out right. of blades.
And other ones are super crappy looking.
Yeah, other ones just look like a dumpster got up and started walking at you.
A lot of them appear to look like projects you drive past on a freeway in Arizona.
Oh, yeah. No,
that's the feeling you get.
Someone's sculpture has come to life, and it's got a saw blade for a head.
Yeah, it looks a lot like garbage art that you would... A lot of every art of that, or picture of them, looks like that. You don't see any cool ones.
Yeah, but they have an instinctual need to do violence.
Mm-hmm.
And when they move, it is supposed to sound like a bunch of scissors cutting, because it's
cool,
just blades moving together. Yeah, no, they have a cool aesthetic.
Yeah, that's a neat idea. All right, let's keep naming them as we can. You go ahead.
So we've got the Gaunt, which are the depressive race,
and they are only happy when they're sad.
Yep, they are only happy when it rains.
Yes.
Yep.
And they're only smiling when it's complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have the ability to fade into any darkness because they hold no color. So they're sort of albino-ish, mm-hmm. but they are, like, completely gray and black hair and just, like, fully 50s TV black and white style.
So they're basically like a Nine Inch Nails song that popped out a pair of eyes and started wandering around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just super sad about everything.
Yeah.
And
they can't be made happy. The instructions for how to roleplay them are things like, no matter what would make you happy, just act sad about it instead.
Yeah.
And
you're supposed to be like, even if your character is happy, they can't express that as an actual emotion.
Right. And it also says you should try to bring down the rest of the party whenever available. Like,
yeah.
Whenever they've accomplished something good, make sure to point out how it's an inevitable failure anyway.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
So then you've got the other side of that, which is...
The Fetch.
The Fetch, which are manic.
Yeah, the Fetch is manic, and they generate bioelectricity, like little electric eel people.
Yeah, they've got a bunch of bio-E.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. Well, they're human size, so they're going to have approximately zero BioE, unless they want to sell some size levels.
Well, I mean, they're obviously full human looks and bipedal electric eel.
Oh, there you go.
Come on. Yeah, I can make a fetch in fucking After the Bomb.
Okay, so fetches are very interesting in this because they're the only electricity that exists in the Vanishing Point.
Yeah, the electronic items just don't work, which is why steampunk is a thing, because electricity just doesn't work at all. Like, even if you brought batteries with you, they wouldn't run and so on.
Right. There's a lot of stuff in this book is... Well, actually, it's interesting because it's like an even mix of... it's just like the real world, but don't worry about it. Like, for example, why there's air on this little planet that's like 500 miles across.
Yeah.
They're just like, whatever, there is. Don't worry about it. Fuck off. But then sometimes they're like, okay, here's an extremely detailed reason why gravity works the way it does here. And here's another extremely detailed reason why these bioelectric people exist, but other electricity can't exist.
Yeah, and the interesting thing with the fetches bioelectricity is that if you, say, were one of the lost and showed up and you had some electronic item, the fetch can power an electronic item by shoving their own energy into it. And depending on how complicated it is, you have to spend vitality points to do it. But it's interesting. They are one of the only people that can get around the rules of the universe there.
Yeah, and steampunk also works for two other primary reasons that we should talk about when we get there. Both of which are just cheats to make it so steampunk can work. One of them is that there is coal that can burn forever. Or sort of, that's covered in phlogiston, which is a material that they can cover coal with that makes it burn for way too long. And the other is that powdered water is a real thing.
Yep.
So you can boil one pot of water for an insane amount of time there if you want, as long as you have some stuff to put in it. So there you go. That's why steampunk works, instead of not working like it is in real life.
Exactly.
Where it's just stupid garbage, where people where they're just goths that are brown.
It's just cogs everywhere that do nothing.
Yeah, it's a bunch of green crap in a tube. Steampunk is the worst. Okay.
So, in addition to that, we've got the...
let's say the insane.
Yeah, we've got the insane, which represent any insanity, but are...
Primarily schizophrenia.
Mostly schizophrenia, because they exist both in the real world and the Vanishing Point at the same time.
Yes, and so whenever you see a totally crazy person in a straitjacket that's standing in a wall and trying to walk through it, it's because he's in the Vanishing Point and he's actually walking somewhere.
Yeah, whenever he's having a conversation with someone that's not there, it's because he's actually having a conversation with someone in another dimension.
Right, so there you go. That's the way that the insane work. You've also got...
Speaking of steampunk, you've got your automata.
Very good. You've got Robo-Men.
Yeah, they are sociopathic because they cannot actually exhibit more than one emotion.
And they are very steampunk clanky type robots. They tend to be... They come in two varieties. They either come in C-3PO or Bender.
Yep.
Almost to the line. You've got the excessively polite ones that are your house robots that are... That
you
are,
got your house robots, and then you got your field robots.
And the worst robot is a house robot. No, so the ones that live in houses are your C-3POs, and they're deeply polite and to a fault and excessive about it. And then the clankies, as they call them, are the metal gross ones that are built out in the streets, and they're mean to you, and they want to steal your wallet.
Yeah, and the automata are built, depending on if they're shinies or clankies, by two different people.
Mm-hmm.
The clankies are by the scroungers.
The scroungers, which...
Which are...
kleptomania? No, it's
the obsessive compulsive.
That's right. It's just obsessive compulsive because they each one of them has its own thing it obsesses over.
Yeah, they are obsessed with items. They need certain things with them at all times.
Yes, so they have the ability as a race. We haven't been talking about the abilities of the races at all, but basically with scroungers, their ability is that they can carry any amount of stuff on their backs.
And they essentially have hammer space as an ability. You can just... Essentially go, yeah, hold on, I think I've got that. Scrounge around in your back.
It's actually
pile.
Very unlikely that they do. It's a roll of eight on a D8.
Yeah, so you've got a 1 in 8 chance of just sort of producing whatever you want, but you can do it.
Right.
And they're like the garbage people from Labyrinth, if you know that movie. So they just walk around with a bunch of trash on their back, and they constantly have random shit they can pull out.
And they talk like your Grendels or your Lord of the Rings, that Gollum. They talk like your Gollum.
They're very, like, low speech, kind of just, yes, me have this. Mm. And yeah. So you're like, okay, great.
And then they intrinsically, as a species, or genera, as they call them, or genus, they don't understand money or the concept of money.
Yeah, they are kinder. And that is the worst thing about any race that you could ever possibly be.
Oh, being kender?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, being kender. Yeah, that they don't understand what money is, and that they'll often be like, I'll trade you three pieces or pictures of Queen Elizabeth for your shiny fender.
And the fact that they also are written in there of, if someone didn't want something, they wouldn't have set it down. So obviously anything is free game to just take.
Yeah, yeah. So they have the first time I ever encountered that was in the second edition Bard's Handbook for how to play a gypsy back in D&D. It was like, gypsies, they have this thing where if anyone puts anything down, it's because they meant for you to take it.
Yeah. Which is just the worst. Any role-playing race that has the role-playing thing of, yeah, just steal from everyone at all times is the literal worst.
No one should get mad at you. It's your race.
Come on, guys. I'm just being in character.
Ugh. Yeah, okay. So there you go. That's scroungers.
And so the shinies are built by the Victorians.
Ah, the Victorians. The Victorians are Victorians. They're pompous, stiff, upper crusty. Bah!
And
shot a human, don't you know?
Actual from Victorian England Victorians, yeah. Who... a giant, massive gathering of them at the same time got teleported to the Vanishing Point, and they ended up becoming their own species.
Right, and their big deal, that you can tell them apart from humans because they all have eyes, they're just amber, like no pupil, no cornea, just amber. Just blobs of amber, one in each eyeball.
And they live for, like, about 1,000 years each.
Mm-hmm.
And they represent megalomania.
Yes, and every single one of them is upper class. There is not a poor Victorian in the world.
No, they are the aristocracy, because mm-hmm. there is an aristocracy.
Okay.
And they are in charge right. of and most things.
There are basically two factions you can belong to in this game. The aristocracy, or kind of the underclass rebellion sort of thing.
Yeah.
And we've described a couple aristocracies so far. The Victorians, and then they use Bladekin. And the clanky, or I'm sorry, the shiny automata as part of their retinues. They also often work with the Janus.
Yeah, the Janus represents your multiple personalities. As if you know the god Janus,
mm-hmm.
then it is a two-headed person that has a full front and back is the front of a person, so they can be both the same sex or opposite sexes.
Most of them are opposite sex. So basically the way that they work is that there's a face on your front and a face on your back, and all of your arms and legs and so on can swing around to face the opposite direction so that you can just kind of walk in whatever direction you need to.
Yeah, your joints can just sort of twist around so that within a second you are facing the other way than you were before.
So player characters or players who control these have to roleplay two different personalities and be in constant arguments with yourself and that sort of thing, which, again, a terrible, terrible idea
yeah.
for... Yeah.
But, you know, at least it's somewhat interesting. It won't
That's
be...
all right. It's better than most times you see this sort of thing crop up.
It does at least say that they will never argue when it's actually a life-threatening situation, and they actually work together in fights ridiculously well. So,
yeah, so that,
you don't have to worry about, like, I want to go this way, no, that way.
Yeah, you're not going to get any of that, which is good. Because usually when you see things that tell you how to roleplay, and they're always like... Like, you have to tell jokes all the time, even when it's extraordinary danger. It's like, don't do that. That's bad. Not here. This is a little better. We'll give it that.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
You've got your, the insiders.
Oh, the insiders.
Insiders are spiders, mm-hmm. and they crawl inside a dude's head and take over his brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then, they'll dig a little hole out of either his eye or his neck so they can look around, and they control all of his actions.
That's right. That's the whole story. You play as a little spider creature that crawls down someone's sleeping throat,
burrows into its brain,
whips a big web around their nervous system, and then takes control of them. And sometimes they have to switch bodies because they can only do this to living people. If they die, they're not useful anymore.
Yep.
Oh, also, this is your chance to play a whole family, because basically humans are RVs to these spiders.
Yeah, because the only thing that would be a little grosser than a spider controlling a human is an entire colony of spiders crawling around inside of your human.
Yeah, your basic, you know, 2.5-child family with one car, they can live inside of a human and pilot it around.
Yep.
The car is the human in this scenario.
And it's super gross.
Yeah.
And they have the same sort of general outlook. The Victorians look down on everyone that isn't a Victorian, and the insiders sort of do as well, because they look at every other race as just sort of being a potential house.
Yeah. They've got to be, like, natives or something. They don't really mention where they came from in the first place, but it's like, okay, everyone else is basically some kind of a insane human that teleported here and then started breeding and lived here.
Well, all the other ones were created, which we'll get to in a moment.
Okay, yeah. And we have at least two more I can think of off the top of my head.
We have the Faceless, which are Slenderman.
Yeah, Slenderman. Straight up Slenderman.
It is a guy that is tall, has no face, and is in a suit. You are actually literally Slenderman. Except you aren't evil, you just have no personality.
We stuck to our policy of not doing any research before these things, so I have no idea if this predates Slenderman or not.
It came out in 2005, so...
I don't know.
It's close?
I don't know when Slenderman hit the world. So, okay, then you also have... their ability is that they are not noticeable.
Yeah, they just sort of walk around and people don't tend to notice them, because why would you ever notice a giant faceless guy?
Right, they're very medium. You also have the Marquis Children...
Ah, yes.
And their thing is masochism.
Yep, they love pain. They love it so much.
Okay, their deal is that they can regenerate from just about any wound you possibly try to inflict on them almost immediately. They thrive off it. They actually live and feed off of being hurt. Now, they are actually led by the Marquis de Sade, who used to run the world of Vanishing Point. And we'll talk a bit about that when we get there. But basically, that's why they're called the Marquis Children. They thrive and exist entirely on being beaten up on. They're another race that's a member of the aristocracy because they do so well living in houses and being beat on by the constantly beating on them Victorians.
Yeah, they end up being really great at being torturers because they get tortured so much, they understand how to torture very intimately, and so they usually get used by the aristocracy as information gatherers and torturers.
Yes. Now, I think there's one more that I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, we've got the Sanguine.
That's the last one I can think of.
The other side, which is sadists.
They're basically vampires, but not vampires, but vampires. Okay, here's the deal with Sanguine. They have thin skin, and they're constantly bleeding out of it.
Yeah.
So their hands are always bleeding, and their eyes are always bleeding, and they have blood in their mouths. And they are constantly trying to bite people and drink their blood. But it's not because they want their blood, it's because they want their pain. Get it? Isn't that just slightly edgier than wanting blood?
Yeah, but it does say that they generally will also have some blood, because, you know, you always want a drink with your meal.
Right, yeah. Plus, who's turning down free blood?
Hey, free blood.
So, is that it? I think we got...
yeah, so yeah, that's okay. That is your choices. You have a whole bunch of various different things you can do, and so when you make your character, you're going to pick that.
Mm-hmm.
Each one of these different characters has a stat spread.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've got your five different stats, and each one is going to have a number of points to start with in those stats equal to 5.
Mm-hmm.
So your basic human is a 1 in everything.
Except for insiders, who have a total of 4 because they're going to be using someone else's body.
Yeah, they don't have any stats in the physical stats because they're just using some meat suit's physical stats.
Yes.
All of them will have various things, and you can only have up to whatever your starting number is, plus 3.
Mm-hmm.
And the highest starting is a 3, so the highest anyone can get in any given stat is a 6.
Right, and I believe that's just the automata, who have almost, they have zeros almost across the board, because all they have is knowledge and strength. They have no dexterity, no agility.
Yeah, some of the they split them up into 3 categories of easy to play, somewhat difficult to play, and very difficult to play. And the ones that are more difficult tend to skew towards having a 3. So, like, the Janus have a 3 in agility because their joints are all able to move however they want.
Yes.
And so you get certain races just get a 3. Some are just 1s across the board.
Like Lost. Lost, which are humans, just have a 1 across the board.
Some are, I'll get a 0 in something and a 2 in something else.
There's that picture of that Bladekin, that just looks like a devil. Doesn't look like a Blade Man at all. So, yeah. So you get these interesting stat arrays, and then you can use some additional character points to build those up.
Yeah. And the most amusing thing to me, though, is, so in true sort of White Wolf fashion, where they go, a 1 in something means you're sick and frail, and a 3 means that you're a above average human, and so on and so on. But it says things like, if you've got a 5 in a stat, then you're like a world-class acrobat, except no human can ever reach a 5,
yeah.
Which means no human has ever been a world-class acrobat.
Well, you're a Vanishing Point world-class acrobat, which is presumably a whole different kind of acrobat.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's just amusing that they give human equivalents for the stats, and then humans can't get to the high end of those equivalents.
Right. It's a minor oversight, but it's definitely in there.
Yeah, it's just sort of amusing yeah. that they did that.
Then there's a bunch of skills that you can purchase,
and you get a bunch of skill points to purchase them with. You can spend them on a career.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's just like a package.
It's just a skill package. So instead of saying I'll buy this individually and this individually, you go, all right, I'm an assassin, so I get the ability to use blades, I've got some stealth, I've got this. It's a bunch of different skills that you'd get. And it generally comes with a discount of about, like, 2 to 4 points.
I forget what your starting points is.
So you'll get, like, 25 points to spend.
Yeah, that's right, 25.
And then if you buy a career, it usually ends up, if you wanted all of those skills anyway,
it's, like, between 16 and 23.
Yeah.
To buy a skill. Or to buy a career. And then you can round those out with additional skills, and then you can still spend your points on a few other things if you like.
So the skills also have a hard cap on 3 to start.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, you're not going to get a lot higher than 3. Like, at the high end, I think they generally also hard cap at about 6 as well, just like stats.
Yeah. Okay, so you can also buy merits and flaws.
Yes, you can. And now, everyone who has listened to this knows that, especially Jeff, you hate merit and flaws systems so much.
Okay. I hate merits and flaws systems that don't do it right, which is like 90% of them.
It's true.
Because 90% of merits and flaws systems fall right into the trap of merits that are actually flaws and flaws that are actually merits. Anything that buys you more spotlight is a merit and not a flaw. No matter what the game says, if yep. you have an arch enemy, that's a merit. That's because you get to roleplay that. That's a hook. That's not a bad thing.
No, and it's so often you'll also see things that are like, this is a flaw. Like, oh, you're kind of stupid, but you're like, oh, it's fine. I'm playing a character that doesn't need intelligence for anything.
Yeah, I'm
so
staying.
I'm just getting more points.
I have halitosis. Good thing I live in a robot suit.
Wee.
Yeah, so that sort of thing's a big problem. This game doesn't do that. This game's merits and flaws are just a series of sliders that go from, like, strong to sickly, and good-looking to ugly, and so on. And you can only get or lose points in them. They're completely self-contained, so you can't use them to hack the system.
Yeah, the merits and flaws points, you get 5 enhancement points, and picking a flaw just gives you more enhancement points, and enhancement points can only be spent on merits.
Yes.
So you can't go, oh, I really want extra stat points or skill points, so I'm going to make myself sickly and cowardly. No, you can't do that. If you are sickly and cowardly, it's because you also want to be a jack of all trades and something else that's a merit.
Yes, so it's not that terrible. And they're all on sliding scales, so it goes from strong to weak, so you can't game your way around them, which is, so this one's like, I'm going to give this the least offensive merits and flaws I've ever seen award.
Yeah, it has the hard limit for you can't go below this, and you can't get above this.
Yeah.
So none of them are really going to make you super crazy awesome. And most of the bonuses are just, you have extra health points, or you have extra vitality,
yeah.
or extra sanity, essentially.
Reduce your maximum dexterity by 1. They're very simple.
Yeah, so instead of affecting your actual stats or your skills, it's just your derived stats, which are health points, mm-hmm. which is your meat damage. You've got your vitality, which is
kind of
your,
just generic energy. It almost vitality almost reads like what hit points are supposed to read, by like in D&D.
Yeah, it's your vitality is your fighting spirit,
yes.
and if your vitality is at 0 or below, then you're knocked out.
Yeah.
If your wounds are at 0 or below, then you're dying.
Yes. And then there's also mental damage.
Yeah, you've got your breaking point, and if you get, say,
one step closer to the edge,
then you might be about to break.
A redneck.
yes.
Okay, so yeah, that's mental damage that you can take. If you hit your breaking point, then I forget exactly. What happens to you when you hit your breaking point?
You go insane. And either you gain a new insanity, there's a huge list of insanities in here,
mm-hmm.
and they have a huge list of phobias, which I loved because it included actual phobias.
Yes, yeah, that was kind of cool. I was reading through it, and I was going, wow, they've got some really obscure ones in here. They've got, you know, your fear of, like, the number, they have triskaidekaphobia, your fear of the number 13, they had fear of unusually long words. Some of the really good ones. And I was thinking, oh man, there's one I learned as a kid that I've, arachibutyrophobia, which is the fear of getting peanut butter stuck to the roof of your mouth. And I was like, oh, well, that's the one I never see. No game ever knows that one. And it had it, but it was listed above in the, a short list they had of phobias that are worthless that you shouldn't let your players have because they're too harmless.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh my God, you actually had it. So good on you, game.
Yeah. The game, does a fairly extensive amount of research into the actual, like, if I'm going to have a game about people that have various mental issues, I should probably know about various mental issues.
I thought this was kind of interesting, and it's something we should definitely talk about while we're talking about the mental issues in the game. One of the insanities you can get is autism.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, it just says it's a difficulty relating to people or to society. These people tend to be fairly withdrawn and can often get stuck that way until they experience a specific stimuli that brings them out of it. And then it has a sidebar. And the sidebar says, autism is a deeply tricky subject. You should definitely discuss with your players whether or not you want to bring this one into the game. You should not simply show up with an autistic character, as this may be offensive to people who are related to those who have autism. And I was like, oh, that's very cute. Wait a minute. This is a whole big section on insanities. How come that's the only one that gets that treatment?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, if you show up to a game and you're like, I'm normally a depressed person, and someone's playing a gaunt and they're like, oh, I'm so sad about everything. You know, generally you're not going to be like, you're making fun of my depression. But if someone's like, I'm an autist, I like My Little Pony, then, you know, you might get upset.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if someone's doing, that's just the worst. I'm a self-diagnosed autist. I have a very complicated gender I need to explain to you.
I have the Asperger's.
No, you don't. This game doesn't mention Asperger's. Thank you, game.
The game, I think, generally assumes that either you aren't playing an RPG if you have something like homicidal mania or actual
dissociative identity disorder.
Yeah, if you have one of the major disorders that a lot of the various races are supposed to be, you're probably not playing this. And I think he's like, yeah, if you've got, like, depression or mania or whatever, you can probably deal if someone's acting hyperactive. But especially since there is more of a, in the role-playing world, the idea that there are going to be people who are autistic who are going to want to play a game, having that sidebar, I think, just sort of covered his bases a bit.
Yeah, I suppose so. I get the impression we may not have the first edition of this book, and that there actually was probably a complaint about autism at some point. Although, that'd be kind of mean to the guy, so let's just assume that he did a good job and he covered his bases on autism.
That, or he actually has...
is related, yeah.
Someone that he knows that is autistic, and so it particularly affected him.
Well, you know, the other thing about, I think there's technically supposed to be a difference between an insanity and a mental disorder.
Yeah.
Because you're born with a mental disorder. And insanities are supposed to be things that afflict you later in life, which is why the game has, phobias and so on, but it doesn't have, you know, just Down syndrome.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you can't play as whatever the crazy British Neverwhere version of a retarded person is.
So you can't get... It's weird because it has autism in there, but it's not like someone's going to scare you into being autistic.
Yeah, well, okay, there are a lot of medicines in this game, so presumably there's some vaccines. Am I right? wait, wake up, sheeple.
So, once you've got your race and your stats and
let
your
that
skills,
slide by.
God damn it. Then you are ready to start playing in this world. And the biggest complaint I've had so far with this game is that all of this stuff, when it's just talking about, like, yeah, and there's this and that, and this doesn't work, and there's these kinds of people, and this stuff is going on, you're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Okay, there's a couple problems with this game, and the thing is, I really like this world. I think he did a great job coming up with a crazy new world. I'd love to read a comic book or a Neil Gaiman book set there. Absolutely would. I mean, granted, I already have. It's called Neverwhere.
Yeah.
It's great. It's an interesting world. The problem is a lot of the stuff he gave us to play with as tools, it's just not fun to play with. Like, okay, we didn't even mention these things. There's powers you get called Esoterica.
Yep. So you can have basically superpowers.
Mm-hmm. Except that most of them just suck. Like, they just aren't that interesting or super. And they fall into that trap of, well, you should put them in the game because you're being thorough, but no one ever wants them. Like the one that lets you leave a message for someone whose true name you know.
Well, the That whole line is weird because you get to know people's true names.
Yeah.
So you eventually get to the point where you're like, I can write a message that only this person can read.
Yeah.
Or I can specifically, like, pick out that person in a crowd because I know his... Even if I know his true name, if I've never seen his face, I can know who he is because he'll look like his name.
Right. So the Esoterica are basically superpowers of, like, this Victorian crazy world. So there's Eschering, which is the ability to kind of just...
Say fuck gravity.
Fuck gravity and do what you want. You can't fly, but you can, like, walk up walls or stand on the ceiling.
Yeah, it's the whole staircases going in opposite directions. Yeah. I can just walk wherever.
Now, the world is doing that on its own. The Vanishing Point world has big old areas of it called Escher Zones, where gravity is just kind of confused and messed up. These people are just especially good at managing those situations.
And then, at decent levels, you can also bring that into the regular world.
Yes.
So outside of an Escher Zone, normally you wouldn't be able to just sort of walk up a wall, but if you've got, like, level 2 or 3 Eschering, then you can start doing that and start fucking with people's concept of reality.
Yes, and then there's also Sideways, which is basically extremely limited teleportation.
Yeah, there are certain things in the world that are connected, so you'll go down one hallway in one city and end up popping out the other end of town.
And the reason that that this is described for, is that certain areas on Vanishing Point, which again is the name of the planetoid you're playing on, Vanishing Point, there has a lot of areas on it that are identical. That you'll come through a cave and you'll see that you realize that this cave is exactly the same as a cave somewhere else. That's because it is that cave somewhere else. There's just more than one seemingly identical exit from it.
Yeah, and so if you didn't have Sideways, you would go in and come out normally and wouldn't realize that you could just go in one cave and come out somewhere else.
Yes, so that's a whole power set. Then there's a whole true naming power set, which is a little, like I said, it's a little too obscure. It doesn't really fit very well. It's a little too obscure. There's one that's the ability to send messages.
Which is, it's part of the true naming thing.
Well, no, there's a second one where you, I'm sorry, I'm thinking of the graffiti one.
Yeah, the graffiti one is you can send messages to people in graffiti and specify only certain types of people can read it.
Right. And then,
There's empathy.
Yes.
So you can read and push emotions onto people.
And you have to be really good at it to push emotions onto somebody.
Yeah, that's a higher end level.
Yeah, and these are really expensive in terms of character creation points.
Oh yeah, this, getting an Esoterica is...
10 points for the first level of it.
Super pricey, and then it just gets way more pricey the more you get.
The leveling scheme is basically, it's 10 points to purchase your first Esoterica, and then 20 points to purchase your second Esoterica. And then if you want to purchase an Esoterica in a different category, you have to add that 30 points before you purchase your first 10 points. It gets crazy expensive very, very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Then there is also an Esoterica for making people who are guilty of something act out on their guilt.
Yeah, you can make... You basically have Ghostwriter's penance stare.
Yeah, you can... And it's... It has a little sidebar that says you can't use your first, force them to do something guilty and then act on that guilt.
You're like, you feel guilty about stealing, so go stab that guy, and now you feel guilty about stabbing that guy.
Yeah, so you can't do that, you can only get them once. But that's another one of the Esoterica sets.
Which is neat.
It's alright. I feel like the Esoterica are really cool, and they have some interesting descriptive powers to them. I just don't necessarily feel like they were really written with gameplay in mind. They're either too good, or they're not good enough.
The way the book is written, it generally doesn't assume that everyone is going to have an Esoterica. And if you do, it also kind of figures you probably aren't going to get to that level 3 ridiculous power.
Right.
Anyone who has an Esoterica is probably going to have maybe a level 1. It's just sort of a parlor trick.
Yeah.
And it's not supposed to be like, you're playing superheroes in steampunk.
The problem is only level 2 is any good for anything. All the level 1 Esotericas are just the ability to recognize that Esoterica is in use. It's always like, what do you have? I have level 1 of Sideways. Okay, you can detect where Sideways zones are. Can I use them? No. I'm depressed because I'm that race that is depressed.
The Gaunt.
It's funnier when you don't name them.
No.
Okay, so...
No, it's not. Oh, nothing's funny.
Nothing's funny anymore.
Thanks for noticing me.
Yeah, you play the Eeyore race.
Yeah.
The last Esoterica is the ability to scrape extra space out of tight spaces.
Which I thought was probably one of the neatest ones.
It is, except that it's a little weak in application. It's very slow. But otherwise, it is very neat.
You have to spend a lot of time, but you can essentially push extra space inside of something.
Mm-hmm.
So you get your Doctor Who talent, where you can make your box bigger on the inside.
Yeah, if you want a picture that Doctor Who spent like 3 months slowly hollowing out the inside of his spaceship from his telephone call booth, then that's what dimensional beggaring is like. Because it takes forever to do it.
Yeah, so, you know, at the first level, you're like, I can get essentially like a bag of holding.
Yeah.
I can just make it so my backpack actually holds a crap load of stuff.
Yeah.
And then out from that, you can go, great, I turn a box into an actual mansion.
And this actually brings up one of my dislikes about the book, which this book is great. I have a lot of likes about this book. But one of the dislikes is that there's a lot of non-descriptive or badly descriptive stuff. Where it's like, level 3 dimensional beggaring is like, you can hollow out as much space as a mid-sized city transit van. So what? Can you just give me a cubic foot rating?
Nope.
I don't know what a mid-sized city transit van is.
I mean, it's a little smaller than the large size.
Yeah, at least he didn't call it a lorry. I gotta get that going for him. But no, is it a big one? Is it a Chevrolet E350? Or are we talking more like the church van model? Just give me square footage.
So we haven't gotten into the actual system at all.
Why would we?
It's D8 based.
This is a D8 based game.
Woo!
Why is it a D8 based game? Well, I'll tell you why. Because D4s and D6s aren't random enough.
Oh, goodness, no.
D12s and D20s are entirely too random.
Oh, yes. And but what about the D10?
Oh, the noble D10, you say. We dislike it because it is not a platonic solid.
Ah, yes.
That's the actual reasoning in the book.
And you know what? That's good enough for me.
I love it. It's the nerdiest thing I've read in a while, and I was all for it. They like the D8 because the D8 is the sort of die that an Egyptian might have rolled.
And so you get... The way combat works is really interesting. You have...
The initiative system is one of the best things in the book.
Great. Yeah. So you'll end up having a number of action dice.
Mm-hmm.
And then when combat starts, you roll all of your action dice, and it's all just a number of D8s.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever comes up on that, there are 8 ticks in every combat. And starting at the first one, you go through, and the GM goes, all right, anyone want to do something on 1, 2, 3? And as soon as you want to act... You say, okay, I'm going to do something.
Now, that means that you can hold your actions. So if you have a die that's rolled a 1, you don't have to say, I have a die on 1, I'm going to go on 1. Because you can use handfuls of dice for actions.
Yeah. But you can only use dice that are currently active. So if I rolled 4 dice, I got a 1, a 3, a 7, and an 8. At 1, I could use that 1 die. At 3, if I didn't use the die to start with at the first tick, I could use 2 dice. If I wanted to wait until 7 or 8, I could use more.
Mm-hmm.
You use dice to defend as well, and you can always use dice that haven't been activated to defend.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you have any dice left, you can still defend yourself. So you don't have to worry about, I have to constantly wait until tick 8 and then throw everything. So you might want to go, yeah, I'll just do 1 die attacks every time it comes up and try to make him waste his dice on
it. It splits you up from being kind of a nimble, pokey fighter into the sort of fighter who holds their actions and swings once really heavy.
Yeah, so you'll have guys that are just like, well, I'm normally fairly accurate anyway, so I'm just going to throw a lot of punches, or go, you know what, I'm just going to try and do 1 big haymaker and make it really accurate.
Mm-hmm. So what happens with those dice when you roll them?
Well, you're trying to hit a target number,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to roll, and your D8s... however many dice you roll, you're only going to pick 1 and add it to your stat, and that's what your score is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you roll an 8, you get to roll it again. You have exploding 8s. Mm-hmm. Now, if you had multiple 8s, you get to roll all of them and then pick the best of those.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you roll another 8, you keep rolling and so on. So, generally, what you're going to roll for stat-wise is... probably about an 8 is average roll.
Mm-hmm.
And then difficult rolls will be upwards of like 20, because they're like, well, if you're rolling this, it's probably because you're throwing handfuls of dice at it.
Yes.
And you'll get to explode and do whatever.
Right. So, honestly, I'm going to go ahead and say I really like this initiative system. I think it's a clever way to represent that you have people who are aiming versus people who are just kind of throwing out a bunch of little jabs.
Yeah. And the cover system is interesting. Getting into or out of cover doesn't take an action.
And it's very important in this game. It's like Mass Effect. You actually have to get into the cover all the time.
Oh, yeah. If you're not in cover, you're probably just going to get shot by someone and die.
Yes.
So cover is super useful, but if you're in cover and an action die comes up, it's stymied. It doesn't do anything because you can't do anything while you're in cover outside of I'll reload my gun or I'll try to heal the guy next to me, whatever it happens to be.
I'll use one of my crazy esoterica.
Oh, that guy's feeling angry at me.
Damn empaths.
So it's got a fairly tight, unique system for combat and for roles in general.
Yeah, I think it's pretty. It's interesting and clever. The D8 thing is super nerdy, but at least it's cute. And also, let's just point this out, in an additionally nerdy act, it includes the conversion rules for how to switch that to other dice if you want.
Yeah, if you're really bound and determined to do everything with D12s, there's a conversion rate.
Yeah, you divide the difficulty of your skill by 3 and then multiply it by half the maximum value of the die you'd like to use instead.
Whee!
What a fun idea.
Yep. So, that's interesting. And then there's the full background, which I'll do a quick summation of the world of Vanishing Point. So, up until this point...
I'm sorry, I thought you wanted background music.
There we go.
Did you not?
No.
Okay.
But why not? Okay. So, up until this point, we've been talking about all these different genuses and so on, but we also had humans that just showed up in the Vanishing Point. Humans didn't turn into Bladekin and Gaunts and so on. What happened is the Atlanteans found the Vanishing Point like tens of thousands of years ago, and they went, holy shit, this place is awesome. It's covered in Liquid Dream, and we're going to call it Liquid Dream. And then some high priest was like, you know, it would be great if we combined this world with our own. And he tried to combine the two, and that basically blew up Atlantis and combined them with that reality. And it combined the high priest with these chains that he was using.
The chains of office.
The chains of office are what they're known as now, but these chains were what he was using to bind himself to reality while he was channeling, and then it ended up essentially just turning himself into the personification of the Vanishing Point.
Yeah, he's a big chain-tipus.
So whoever has the chains of office on goes insane... and has absolute power over the Vanishing Point.
Right. And notable, they call them the Bound One when they have them. And notable ones include Elizabeth Bathory.
Yep.
And the Marquis de Sade.
And
Nazimendius.
Yeah, various pharaohs, which is... Each of the various Bound Ones ended up creating things. So the Gaunt were originally created by the old Atlanteans... because they wanted a race to keep track of history, and they are the history keepers.
Right.
We had the Bladekin created to be soldiers. We had the Janus created by the Roman Bound One, who was creating a thing to be in honor to the god Janus.
Why would anyone do that? Janus was a terrible god even then.
The insiders are unknown how they came about, but part of it is considered... the pharaohs would go into the Vanishing Point by being mummified and going there, and apparently one of the Bound Ones who was going to be mummified had a tomb spider on him when he was mummified, and so it was inside of him when the chains of office went on, and so the spider became the Bound One rather than the human.
Oh, I think I get it now. What you're trying to say is some bullshit.
Yeah, so some bullshit happened and all of the various races were created by the Bound Ones.
Okay, great. Including the Marquis's children, who were created by the Marquis de Sade.
Because the Marquis pulled the chains, got the chains pulled off by Elizabeth Bathory.
Yeah.
And was like, I will help you, lover. And he's like, ow, that hurts so much, and I love it.
Yeah, and then Ozymandias was one of the many types who got stuck with the chains, and he used them to create the Escher Zones. So all the parts of the world where gravity don't work, or doesn't work correctly, that was created by Ozymandias.
And so one of the current Bound One was from the Victorians. Someone created... how you get into the Vanishing Point as a human is you look at something that makes your brain just lose its shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you see something that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, if you see like a weird picture, like it gives really bad examples. Like, oh, you see that picture of it's the old woman or a young lady and you see both at the same time. You're like, okay, great.
Oh, great. So whenever I open one of those books by Richard Lederer or whatever, I'm going to go insane and go to another universe?
Every time I look at a magic eye puzzle, I'm going to go to the Vanishing Point.
I always like doing it this way. Imagine that you're trying to trace your hand with a pen. You have a pen and you're trying to trace your hand.
Yeah.
Easy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now do it with an egg beater.
Yeah.
Ah, your brain!
Oh,
okay.
No!
Yeah, okay, so that's basically what happens. Your brain sees something it doesn't have room for, and then you go to another planet.
And usually what happens with that is you also, if you see someone snap back to the vanishing point, because there are ways
gravity.
To... Yes. There are ways to get from the vanishing point back to reality. And if you see someone go from reality to the vanishing point, they kind of like twist sideways and disappear, and that'll snap you into the vanishing point.
Oh, it's horrible. There might be vomit on your sweater already.
Yeah. Mom's spaghetti. Okay, so the current inbound one is from the group of Victorians that came through. And so, yeah.
And he's surprisingly accessible. He lives in a church in the main city that everyone lives in. And if you find him, he'll probably yell at you a bunch and threaten to disintegrate you and shit like that. And fun times.
Yeah, and if ever there is not a bound one, the vanishing point begins to disintegrate.
Yeah, so someone needs to be the bound one to keep this crazy planet going.
And of course, someone wants to be the bound one because you get to be God.
Yeah. A couple more crazy things about Vanishing Point, the world. It's shaped like a brain.
Yep,
and
it has lobes and everything.
It's divided into brain sections. So there's a temporal lobe and an occipital lobe and a parietal lobe, and all of those are basically countries.
Yep.
The whole thing's really tiny. It's about a 1,400-mile circumference.
Yeah, so it's said that married couples will try to do a full around the brain.
Yeah. Most people live inside it instead of on it. It has oxygen and everything, and there are big, cool animals that are flying around up top and also burrowing through it and so on.
Oh, yeah, it's got a huge bestiary of just random weird shit.
Oh, yeah, it's very fungusy. It's like the guy was like, well, I've read Menzo Baranz and other books about dark elves, so I know that fungus is the big thing when you're writing about fantasy plant life. You have to put in a lot of fungus. So almost everything is some kind of crazy fungus or a weird worm you can eat.
Yeah, I like that there's one monster that is just, it's a cave, and it's got, it's the female.
Yeah.
And so, like, there'll be a pool of acid, and that's its digestive system, and the stalagmites and stalactites are its various tentacles, and it has boulders near it, which are its eggs, and then it's fed by the males, who look like weird cave chickens.
Yeah, so there's cave chickens, and then an actual cave, and they aren't actually male and female, they're just, the female is a sessile organism that eventually buds off and sprouts a bunch of chickens that feed it,
yeah.
And then eventually one of them will wander off somewhere and become a cave.
Yep.
It's shenanigans of the highest order, but it's awesome. Also, the cave chickens are described as medium delicious.
Yeah. Or you can get the worm burger.
A burger worm, which is a big centipede that can be cut into easy round segments that are edible. And it's funny because he describes it as unpalatable because it tastes too strongly of garlic. That's one way I know for sure that this book was actually written by a British person.
It has flavor to it. Yeah. It's unpalatable.
This meat tastes too garlicky. Only a crude American would eat this.
Dude, I would eat a burger worm all day. It's supposed to taste like ground beef with garlic. That sounds delicious.
That sounds awesome. Crazy British person. What, they need a boiled vegetables worm that they can eat instead. So yeah, okay. A few more things. There are, as we mentioned earlier, there's phlogiston. Now, phlogiston is an ancient alchemical concept that's supposed to be the chemical that escapes from things when they are on fire.
Whee!
In this universe, it's just orange stuff you can mine out of rocks, and when you put it on things, it makes them burn for way longer, which is how things can ride around for an hour on one piece of coal.
Yeah, so you get steam chairs so that your aristocracy can drive around town.
Yeah, and so and I guess also in this universe, the steam's just not that hot. Because there's a lot of things that are like, oh, it blows steam everywhere and right on you. Like the robot horse, its yeah. mane is made of steam. And I'm like, you know, you guys know steam is boiling water, right? Like, it'll burn you real bad.
Not here. Not
totally doesn't.
Not vanishing point.
Because steampunk is rad.
Yep.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Okay, anyway. So there's also, I forget what they specifically call it, but it's the water, primal water.
Yeah, primal water, which is also colloquially known as dehydrated water.
Yeah, if you add some of it to water and mix it in and boil that water, it will generate way more steam than there was water.
Yeah, so water is a scarce thing in the Vanishing Point, and so having actual water that you can boil for a long time makes it so that steam works, because otherwise steam wouldn't work. And also, what they say that whenever there's, like, droughts and people need water, they'll end up putting the dehydrated water into it, boil it, and then recondense the water so that they can actually have water for people.
Right. Given that they say that you get like 10 times as much water out of water that's had that primal water in it, that stuff must be super rare if there's actually a water shortage.
Well, regular water, yes. Like, so finding a pool of water is difficult. Apparently finding this weird powder is not as difficult.
Okay, well then there's no water shortage. Because it's real easy to boil water and then condense the water down. So that's just, I don't know, it's silly writing. They should have made the primal water rarer. Sorry, I'm being super pedantic. Okay, there's also robot horses, robot battleships that walk around on feet.
Yeah, there are guns and knives. And
there's a whole system of cars that you can ride around in that are just bullets.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can ride, and then there's a whole class of people that are developed that do nothing throughout their whole life but grease up the holes through which bullet cars travel.
Yeah, and so
steampunk. Steampunk everywhere.
Yeah, it's super steampunky. You've got the resistance versus the aristocracy. You've got steam things all over the place.
It's one of those books that tells you that, you know, oh, this isn't a game about dungeon crawling. You won't spend a lot of time doing that. It's going to be mostly mysteries and intrigue.
Hell yeah. I'm going to be fucking Shaggy with a top hat and a cog on it.
Yeah, and the top hat has a chakram hidden in the brim.
Yep.
Yep. So it's one of those. You know, those types of games that tell you that it's all about intrigue, which is great if you happen to have the DM who's really good at intrigue.
Yeah, because otherwise your DM is just like, I guess you pissed off the aristocracy again, and they sent some Bladekin after you.
Yeah. Bladekin, by the way, can be broken up. The easiest way to damage Bladekin, and this is one of my favorite little bits in the game, and they mention it like 8 times, because the book is written in backwards chronological order or something. They can be damaged by lubricant.
Yeah, because their body is just blades rubbing against each other.
Yeah.
So if you can make it so that the blades slip, then just parts of them fall off, so they take damage from it.
Yeah. So that's kind of clever. I thought that was cute. Anyway, let's get to favorites and least favorites, because we're running right out of time.
All
right. John, what would you say is your very favoritest thing?
My very favoritest thing?
About Vanishing Point. I don't want to hear just puppies.
Aw, okay.
I do want to see some puppies.
So I would say my favorite thing about this is probably going to be the D8 system. I think it's really interesting. Normally, when we've reviewed any games in the past that have tried to do something weird, a lot of the time it just falls super flat. You get that tricode bullshit from Starfleet, and you're just like, oh god, I wish you had just stayed with a D20. I hate you so much.
How about the absolute value, negative skill example, roll, and then take the original 3 highest or lowest based on your pre-absolute value thing from Don't Look Back.
Yeah, that is never far behind.
Was that one of your... Because that was atrocious.
Yeah, so this actually has an interesting functional dice system, which is important to me.
I'm sure that any day now, after we post this, someone's going to tell us it's not functional and why.
Oh, I'm sure.
But on close initial examination and brief reading, it looks like a fun system. It looks like it's got a good idea behind it.
It looks like I could roll some dice and not be pissed off at what I was trying to do.
And I do not do this podcast to just be a curmudgeon. I want to reward good ideas. So that's a fun idea. So, yeah.
So what idea would you like to reward? What is your favorite thing in this game?
I like the races. And again, I think it's very delicate ground that this guy had to tread to write his book, because every race is basically an insanity, and that's kind of,
yeah,
a little sensitive. It's tough to do, but I think he did a fun job of making them. They're interesting, they look cool.
And he didn't turn it into, you have an insanity that is a superpower, it's just a race that represents some type of mental disorder.
That's true, you can't sad your way out, like, through a door or something like that. So yeah, that, except for the Slender Men, and I forget what they represent.
Loss of identity.
Yeah, because their whole deal is that they're superpowers that no one can ever remembers that they see them.
Yeah.
So anyway, other than that, and they're not called Slender Men, but oh my god, are they ever Slender Men?
Yeah.
Okay, what would you say, so mine is the races, I like them a lot. What would you say is your least favorite thing?
My least favorite thing is the editing in this book. It starts out with all of this information about, like, there are these genuses, and you'll want to pick something, and there's this and that, and you're like, I have no idea what this world is.
Oh, yeah.
If this was based on a book, and going into it, I was supposed to have known about Vanishing Point, then I could understand leaving all of the information to the end. But you go through this book, and you're like, but why is there a Vanishing Point? Why is it called a Vanishing Point? Why are there literal Victorians here? This makes no fucking sense. And why are the Victorians not just humans? And then finally they go, oh, because of bullshit. And you're like, okay, thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah, so it takes a little while to understand what it is that you're reading. That's absolutely true. Notably, it takes you like 2 chapters after you learn how to assign your stats to determine what they do.
Yeah, the editing in this made the information just sort of ass backwards.
Yeah.
And that's really sort of annoying to me when I'm reading through a book. especially when I like the book, because I'm like, I want to know more about your world, but you're being really cagey for some reason.
Yeah, I think it's because they want that story that's in there, the fluff story that runs throughout it,
yeah,
to make more, like, you know, be a more interesting reveal as the character becomes more knowledgeable, and so do you. I think it's supposed to be kind of the feel. But it's not worth it, because you only read that story once. You have to play this game. Well, you don't have to, but ostensibly you want to.
All right, so your least favorite thing in Vanishing Point?
I'm going to have to fall back on the fact that a lot of the mechanics in the game have really arbitrary or examples of what they do or how. Like, half the esoteric are just like, maybe you could do a thing. I don't know. Use your imagination. And I'm not a fan. We were just mad about that in Dark Earth just recently, where it was like, maybe this makes people fall asleep or something. Whatever.
Yeah, I mean... I'm not as pissed, because it does give you at least two out of the three esoterica that you'll see give you solid, this is what it does.
Yeah.
But there is always one in there that's like, it does stuff. It has a vague idea of what you do.
And it's not just the esoterica, but it shows up in a couple of the other things as well. Like, for example, it's easy to make a half-breed race. You can be a race of any two of the ones that can reproduce. Yeah. I know. Well, we don't have time for that. But you can make half-breed races. And then it says, for half-breeds, they only get the powers from their two sides that are physically representable. For example, gaunts have the ability to disappear into shadows because they are dark in color. You can figure it out from there. Like, no, you can't. That's a pretty important power distinction. So anyway, I'd say it probably needs a little tightening up of some of the more nitty gritty rules.
I think a good editing pass over this book would make it really good.
Yeah. So bearing that in mind, would you play Vanishing Point?
City of Violence.
City of Violence.
Steampunk of Violence. I would totally play Vanishing Point. This is one of the few ones that I'm giving a full-on seal of approval. Like, if someone came up to me tomorrow and was like, dude, I'm putting a Vanishing Point story together, do you want to play? 100% in.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, are you down to play some Vanishing Point?
Despite my great, terrifying hatred of all things steampunk, because it's just the stupidest thing. Anyone out there who's into steampunk, it sucks and you're stupid. I'm just kidding, I love you. No, I don't. I would play this game. It's an interesting game that has a cool mechanic to it. I like the way the initiative system works. I like the sheer inventiveness of it. Most of the games we've read recently, and this is exactly what I needed, because when we finished Dark Earth, I was telling John, I can't do someone else's, and then Fantasy Imperium, right after that, I was like, I can't do another game that's someone's idea of how they read D&D and they thought they could do better.
Yep. This was actually its own thing.
It's a whole new inventive universe. It was something I really needed to read. It was a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, this is my gift to you.
Oh, thanks for finding it. So there you go. We would both play Vanishing Point. We recommend you seek it out, read it, see if it's to your taste, because it seems like it's an interesting game that's got some ideas. You'll need to do a little tweaking to play it well, but I think it might be a legitimate fun game.
Yeah. Good job, Ashok Desai.
Yeah, your twisted imaginings generated a reasonably good game.
Yep.
So there you go. Got anything else you want to contribute?
No, I think that just about covers it.
Okay, I want to throw in some house notes. We recently had an offer from someone who wants to mail us books. So he's going to be sending us some books, and we're going to review them and thank him on the air and all that stuff. If you ever want to do that, feel free. Just drop us an email, and we'll get you in touch for how to do that. Our shelf is always growing with these weird old books, and it's fun to do. Of course, we won't send them back to you. Fair warning.
Yeah, no, this is ours now.
Yeah, it belongs to us. Okay. Other than that, if you have a comment you'd like to leave, feel free to do so right below, or you can find us at SystemMasteryPodcast.com, System Mastery on iTunes or Stitcher, System Mastery at Gmail, System Mastery on the Facebook, System Mastery on the Twitter. We're on all these various sources. You can find us and tell us that you hate us. Go right ahead.
Whee!
Yep. Until 2 weeks from now, I have been Jeff, and this has been John.
Yes, indeed.
And thank you for listening.
Tally-ho!
Tally-ha, indeed, good sirrah.
Oh, my.
You know the ones I mean.